Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leona, yeah, they're playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name.
Everybody, and welcome to the RHAP BNB for week 9 of Survivor 46. My name is Mike Bloom, and well, we talk about Spicy Jeff, but we're more so talking about the seasoning on this season, which is just proving to be a wild series of tastes as we get yet another chaotic week. I think a lot of us felt coming in that we just settle into this, like, unanimous cue boot where everyone would get on the same page. Not today, Satan, not with this cast, as we have yet another wild episode of the show to talk about. So excited to welcome in the panel to break down all of the madness once again. First off, someone who compared to me, I think definitely is the opposite of a dumb buffoon. It is Leona Boris. Leona, how are you?
Oh, thank you, Mike. I'm doing well. I was thinking, as soon as you said the spice comment, what type of seasoning is this season? Obviously, a necessary thing to answer. And the first thing that popped in my mind, and the only thing, is slap your mama seasoning.
Oh.
There's something so ridiculous, so spicy, so all over the place about this, that it's making for a very enjoyable but confusing watching experience.
See, for me, maybe it's a little bit of that Jordan Kalish bias. I'm thinking everything but the bagel seasoning, right? Where it's got a little bit of sesame in the beginning, and then you got some poppy, some salt mixed into everything. But regardless, we've got someone that is here to bring the sweetness to perhaps combat the spiciness. So excited to welcome in, for the first time to the BNB, somebody who one of last week's guests, Omer Zahir, said, holds a currently unbroken record for most challenge wins in the new era. So welcome in the reigning challenge beast, Franny Marin.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, that's a shock to me, as it was to many. I think that Omer is potentially counting challenges that I did, in fact, sit out of. But I'm not gonna dispute it. So yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. In terms of spice for the season, like, this feels like a very important question to address. Mm-hmm. My first thought was like tahine, like something that's just like very like zingy, very tasty. Mm-hmm. But I did pregame this recording by having a really spicy breakfast sandwich. So my mouth is still like a little hot, and I think that will put me in the right headspace to discuss this very spicy season of Survivor.
You're gonna be spitting fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That was the logic. Yeah.
Instead of mermaid dragon, you're dragon mermaid, right?
Oh, well, no, it's gonna be dragon on the way out as well. Let's be honest.
Oh, Mike.
Oh no.
We have a lot to talk about, whether it's pooping out breakfast sandwiches or shitting the bed the way that Hunter did. I mean, Franny, the last time we heard from you in a major capacity talking Survivor 46, it was the premiere. Jelinski still lingers on the minds of people in and out of the game. But suffice it to say, so much has changed between now and then. What have been your thoughts about Survivor 46 so far, in, as we were talking about, trying to encapsulate it in one picture?
Yeah, it's been a wild, wild journey. Yeah, as you mentioned, in some ways, not much has changed. We're still talking about Jelinski. But in other ways, really everything has changed. I like that everything but the bagel seasoning, because this season to me has sort of felt like an everything bagel, and that there's one side of the bagel that doesn't have much on it. Like, they kind of just Aww. Forgot to season that yeah. side. And with so much love and respect, that was the pregame for me a little bit. But now, like, we've had a couple bites, we flipped it over, and we're like, holy crap, this side of the bagel is packed. And that's how I feel about this post-merge part of the season. Like, everyone is wild. Everyone has their own agenda, and they just they're just shooting in a million directions, and it's really, really fun to watch. So I'm really back on the season 46 train big time.
I think that's a really great point, because when you are getting to know castaways, right, you're getting to know these people who are competing, like typically you get a sense of them relatively early on. You're like, okay, this makes sense for this person to do. But with this season, I don't know why the imbalance pre-jury, like we didn't really get to see a lot of anyone who was not on purple, but we're just getting to discover more and more and more and peeling back more and more layers. And those layers are more and more confusing or more chaotic. And I think that that's what's making it really fun. I feel like I'm discovering something new every episode.
Well, I think that's because the cast is kind of discovering something new every episode. Well, yeah. And that new thing is who to target. I mean, I think a perfect example of what you're talking about is Liz, who got so many random fits and starts. I think we got more reactions to Liz than Liz actually talking about herself in the pre-merge. I think part of it is due to proxy of, like, she was on a tribe that was one of the winningest in the history of Survivor. And then on top of that, there was so much time dedicated to, like, the dynamics of Venus and the Tevin Hunter relationship, et cetera, stuff that would germinate later, that Liz comes out of nowhere and, like, good God, between last episode orchestrating the Tevin boot, this episode where now she has made this vow that, like, Q took my move. He stole my thunder when he actually tried to quit the game. And between whatever the hell is gonna happen next episode, I will not say too much, but if you're watching promos, like,
oh my God, stand up for everyone. I'm so concerned. I love in the next time on her being like, oh, because it's bringing out, like, Debbie in a way that I cannot wait. And wait, I'm sorry, quick aside, this will be the second time that Debbie or her spirit has appeared in season 46. If you remember, there was a brief clip of her in when Hunter was putting the things in order. This is more Debbie than I ever thought
right.
I would get. So
that's how he remembered this, or tried to, the seasons. Yeah. Right? Like, oh yeah, Debbie was on this one.
Oh my gosh. The Liz thing, I mean, when, I can't remember, it was brought up multiple times, but she hasn't eaten in 72 hours. I'm like, how is she alive? Like, what has she eaten? Like, tell me exactly how much or what Liz has eaten, because right now I'm at like 3 popcorn kernels.
Yeah.
And hopefully something else. Like, how is she alive?
Popped. She just ate the seeds out of the bottom of the bowl. Like, she's had
no, she's like shaking the bowl at the bottom. I mean, I would imagine, I don't know, she's probably like licking trees. I imagine she goes like the Jess Chong route. Like, how many ants has she consumed over the course of this period? Like, this woman is going to become, I think, the hangriest contestant in Survivor history. And it's going to be amazing. Because again, like, she has just come out of the woodwork. And is, again, to your point, both of you, is a great representation of this season where you're not really sure where things are going. And then it just comes out of nowhere and hits you where, again, even the idea, I think, starting off this episode where we get confirmation that Q indeed was going to throw himself on his sword after we spent this entire week being like, there is no way this man, like, clearly it's a big brain plan on his part. There's no way he's walking out with his Q skirt tucked between his legs. But it truly was the case. Franny, I mean, give me your reaction to this.
Yeah, I would have staked my entire life on the fact that this was a strategic move by Q. I was absolutely shocked. And like you said, Liana, Q I feel like is the biggest example of a player who I felt like I thought I knew and understood. And now I'm like, whoa, where is this coming from? But now that I'm saying that, he's already done this once before. So it's just so wild to me how Q, who, like, really does seem to be this huge contender, you know, really competitive person, would genuinely be willing to leave. Like, I'm curious, if they had all voted for him, would he have been pissed? Would he have just gone quietly into the night? Like, what would have happened? Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that it didn't work out, but it just makes it, like, it would have been easier to digest, I think, if it was strategy for some of the other people. I think it's actually harder to accept the fact that Q really just wanted to leave, because now they're like, well, what do I do with you? You could do this again at any time.
Yeah, I think that's unfortunately the only thing that Liz has had to digest for the past 72 hours.
Yeah. Just that, and it didn't go down easy.
It did not.
There were a lot of heartburn.
It's like, even now in this conversation, I still am not convinced that it was just to get voted. Like, I want, okay, so I've been so crazy busy this week. I didn't get to watch the episode live, so I missed a lot of the online discourse. So when I watched the episode, I was like, okay, he's saying it was to get voted out, but that can't be right. Like, I'm sure it came out in an interview or the cast boiled it on Twitter because they're very active on Twitter. Like, sure, someone said something somewhere that was not just he just wanted to get voted out. But sure enough, that seems to be the case. And my brain can't even comprehend that decision. And I think that that is what is going on with the season. There's so many out of left field decisions that I'm just like, what? It's leaving me so confused.
Yeah. I think we talk about how the new era is a very fluid dynamic, you know, even moving on from like the voting blocks, but like this thing is practically its own state of matter with just how random things are, considering that the idea of turning on your number one ally has just been the lifeblood of the post-merge. And it really culminates here where Tiffany and Q were one of like the tightest alliances in the game. You know, they were thick as thieves throughout. That she was his plus one, and he really ends up sort of reaping what he sowed in the previous episode, where we see, I think, the most significant drastic shift in a friends to enemy dynamic I may have ever seen in Survivor history. And I know like Chrissy and Ben, Abby and RC are good examples, but like, these two, I would have never thought that they would truly break apart. And the fact that it's not even the fact that they are enemies, but that they are getting in, I will use the term several because it probably was at least seven, like explicit arguments back and forth at the challenge, at tribal council, yelling at each other. I mean, this is just wild. Franny, are you watching Survivor 46? You're like, oh man, I'm so happy our cast was so kumbaya by comparison. Or are you one of these people being like, this is what we wanted?
Yeah. I mean, it's a different strategy. Like, I found a number one ally and I was like, we should start dating. It's kind of a different mindset, I think, than the people on this cast. But yeah, it's so strange. And I'm trying to really like put myself in the heads of all these players that are doing this, because I'm like, what would motivate you to do this? We're not even like that close to the end. I know we're getting closer, but I feel like, you know, 7-6 is really when people start. And not that I've ever been this close, so like, what am I supposed to know?
Did you like that, by the way, when Jeff's like, Charlie, it's not the end yet, but it's pretty close. How do you feel about being safe?
Yeah, just like, it's, I mean, I guess this is exciting. I'll just put it on you. Yeah. Oh man. Which, by the way, I love that win for Charlie. That was such a funny moment because, I'm sure we'll get to this, but I'm so curious to hear your thoughts on Charlie, because I noticed when Jeff was putting the necklace on him, everybody went, aw, like that was the reaction that they had. And I think Charlie's just, he's viewed as so sweet and so, you know, unassuming, and he seems to be doing a lot in the game. But yeah, voting out number one allies, it's such an odd thing. I wonder if in this season where everyone's a spark plug, everyone's doing something crazy, everyone's making their mark, people feel this like more intense desire to go off the beaten path and do something that will be wild and, you know, potent, like vote out their number one ally. I don't know if it's logically the best move, but I think that people are like really just want to stand out. And it's hard to stand out when you're surrounded by crazy people, you know?
I mean, I'm gonna give you the alley-oop and allow you to boast about your own season a bit, because these people, before they went out to play, just finished your season. They went out like 5 days after the finale of 44. I mean, I know that ultimately Jam Jam not getting rid of Carolyn worked out well for him, but like, do you think that's front of mind, or even like Heidi trying to get rid of somebody like Danny, that they're thinking, we're gonna carry through what these people couldn't do?
Yeah, I like that idea. I think that they probably gleaned a lot from 44, kind of in a lot of different dimensions. I think that's one of them. I also think that the success of the Tika 3, also donning purple, as they kind of moved through the post-merge and towards the end, had some effect on how people view those Yanu 3. And I wonder if the fact that the Tika 3 were so huge, so successful, contributed to how quickly the Yanu 3 were willing to shatter. Because I think there has to be some part in their mind where they're like, I don't want us all three to be targeted and be seen as a similar trio. So as soon as somebody does something I don't like, I'm not part of the Yano. Like, we're not a group. Yano 3 is dead. Break up bangs. They're like, we're done. We're done. I wonder if, like, that history of the Tika 3 is influencing them a little bit, their desire to differentiate themselves.
Mm-hmm. I think that's definitely a possibility. Although at the same time, I just see the emotional reactions from players like Tiffany and Kenzie. And I'm like, I don't know. Is this an act? Is this real? Like, they, especially, I mean, Kenzie after Tribal in this episode, when she's like, I'm pissed. I'm like, okay, how much are you playing that up? Like, how much of that is real? I just think that when you, there's so many people that are going, it's what you said, that you're trying to, like, out top crazy, right, is how it feels, and that leads to just some very, very chaotic things. And I think it's not only wanting to make a move, it seems there seems to be a lot of talk about, like, my move,
me move,
like Maria, the whole situation with Tiffany, right? She wanted it to be her move. Liz was like, this has to be my move, me solo dolo move. And I'm not 100% sure, like, exactly the origin of that, because it, I don't know, have we seen that a lot before? I feel like it is, yes, I got to build my resume, but I never felt it so clearly, like, me specifically.
Well, very early on, I don't think so. When Tevin is at the final 11 being like, I, or Venus saying, I'm going to take credit for this, that's as much as Jeff is telling Charlie, there's still a lot of game to play at that point, and you're just setting yourself up to get targeted. And I really wonder if it's this idea, to both of your points, about sort of taking on the sort of musical tone that everyone else is doing. What's the tempo of the band members around you, where let's think about the fact that this is the jury phase, and you have to think about, what are the people that I'm sending to this bench going to respect? Will they, if they're running around taking out their number one allies, playing this really fervent, fantastical game, and I play a little bit more like under the radar stable game, and I get to the end, are they going to like that? Like, yes, I made my way to the end, but would someone like Q end up voting for somebody like that over someone that, again, is taking these bigger swings? And so that's what makes, again, honestly, every season of Survivor so interesting, just because it really is about picking up on what is the vibe of the tribe. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, whether it was, like, you know, the shot heard round the world when you see Tevin try to take out and Liz try to take out somebody like Soda, or what have you, and how that led to sort of the downfall of everything afterwards. I think it just really has been spreading this theme of, like, nope, you got to play big, you got to play hard. And as much as we're sitting on our tuchus being like, in our own butt cushions being like, no, what are you doing? You're just making yourself a target early on. I think these people are trying to get a feel as to what jurors would respect, and are, like, trying to claim dibs on things ahead of time if and when they get to the end.
Yeah, I love that. That's one of the things I love most about Survivor, is that process in each season of the cast developing kind of a social contract of what's important, what's not, what's respected, and what's not. So I don't know. But what's hard is, like, first of all, I really feel for somebody like Liz, because I do think that you can feel when you're out there if you are not kind of the main character of the story. Like, you feel like you're not the one that people are talking about. You're not the one making moves. I think that's an anxiety inducing feeling. So I can see why she's having this, you know, desire to make a move. But the interesting thing about that, like, social contract with the jury and the players is, you know, you can't talk to the jury once they're voted out. So you don't always get that social contract right. They might be sitting there thinking, wow, we've had these really crazy tribal councils. I bet the jury loves that. I bet they want to see somebody loud and flashy at the end. Maybe the jury's sitting at Ponderosa like, God, if we could just have somebody chill to win this game, that would be incredible. So people are, you know, going off of very little information, maybe making assumptions about what the correct way to play is. So I'm curious to see how that works for them going forward.
Well, and that's, I think that also goes back to Charlie, right? Because if you think about Charlie, I think, has done an amazing job of cultivating this perception of himself that is like, oh, sweet Charlie, like, sweet little Charlie, like, Q's mentoring him, you know, oh, he's like Maria's little, like, sidekick kind of thing. Like, I don't know. I really feel like a lot of people like him. A lot of people want to work with him. The reaction to him winning immunity, I think, definitely says something. So he's kind of the one that's the most calm, I would feel like, out of everybody out there. So is that a situation where if he manages to get to the end, can he kind of play up that angle of like, look, I just let all this chaos occur around me. I just made sure to make the right bonds. And then the jury might be more upset at other people that he ends up taking the win.
Yeah, though I can see the other side where that perception can be something to work so hard against, right? Of like, oh, you said you did all of this, but what did you do without Maria? What did you do without Ben, et cetera, et cetera? But for the sake of Liana's optimism, let me lay out a metaphor here for you. Ooh. Let's say that there's this factory that you're to win at the end, where you undergo a series of moral, emotional, maybe sometimes physical trials, and you enter alongside these incredibly loud, flawed characters who along the way end up falling by the wayside due to sort of succumbing on their own sins, right? Sometimes it is vanity, sometimes it is gluttony, sometimes it is self-centric actions. And so who's left at the end to inherit the factory but a boy named Charlie? A boy who was the most stable, had the best sense of morality, and perhaps on paper was not necessarily seen as like the one to take it all. But by virtue of being the last one standing and being the most consistent, he flies away in that great glass elevator to parts unknown.
That was a great metaphor because it really took me until the very end to get to. I was like, why did he say factory at
factory.
The beginning? I don't get it.
It was the gluttony that did it for me. I was like, oh, Willy Wonka. But I will say I was convinced it was the Wizard of Oz for a second. I was like, oh, yeah, the Tin Man.
Picturing like Santa's factory, like elves. I was like, we're inheriting Santa's.
Survivor Reindeer Games is coming.
Yes.
Oh my god. Yeah, but that's a great metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I agree. And that's the thing is that it's well, it's going to be that or it's going to be one or the other. But it does feel like okay, either that is going to be respected of like okay, you were the one that was left that managed to survive the chaos that ensued, or it is like well, you were just. The, you know, so-and-so's number two, like you didn't actually drive anything. You didn't actually do anything. You weren't actually aware of anything. And that's like, what's so tough. And I think that's why there's a lot of impetus on the players to be like, this is my move. This is what I did. Like the fear of going to the end and the final three and getting like Troyzand where you're just completely ignored by the jury. I mean, I could imagine that being a very real fear out there and trying to think like, what am I going to say when I get there? To be able to articulate the agency that you had, even if it's not every move, but just something that you can claim as yours, I think is something that probably weighs heavy in the players' minds. And that's why we see this type of behavior.
I mean, Franny, I would imagine you saw it first and foremost when someone like Heidi, who was already going to make the final three, sends herself in to try to leave that last impression.
Yeah, totally. Well, I'll just say, Liana, when you said that, like the fear of getting Troyzand, I felt like a shiver pass over my body. So I think that was really real. I mean, even like I went out at 8. So actually, oh, the same as this episode. And I think at that point, it's like a smidge early to start. A smidge early to start thinking about like your final tribal council speech. But, you know, I would have quiet moments and I would sit there and be like, oh, no. So I think that that's a very real concern. And Heidi, you know, in my season was lucky to have that opportunity to put herself in a place where she could really, you know, blow everybody out of the water and get Carson out in fire. Sometimes you don't have that opportunity. You know, you need to like create those opportunities for yourself. And even for Heidi, she did this incredible thing. It wasn't enough. And so they got to start thinking about that early. And that's something that I'm really, really curious to see with Charlie and Maria. We've literally seen Maria talking, like you said, Liana, about wanting to claim a move, wanting to claim this move against Tiff. I wonder, when is the point where they realize that they have to differentiate from each other? And will that differentiation be getting somebody else out and like Maria doesn't tell Charlie or Charlie doesn't tell Maria? Or will it be turning against their number one allies? Like, you know, it's a cool thing to do right now. I have no idea how that's going to play out. I hope that they can be level-headed and, you know, kind of continue as a pair because I think they're in a good spot. But I don't know. They're in a crazy, crazy alternate world where different things go and different things are the norm. So I don't know.
Well, let me then segue into throwing out a question that probably all these players are asking in the wake of this most recent episode. Liana, who do you give credit to for the Hunter boot? Is it someone that was in this majority? Is it Hunter himself?
Yeah, let's give credit to Hunter. He'll love that, poor guy. That's so tough, right? Because I think it was almost a general consensus that, like, well, Hunter's a big challenge threat. So obviously the first time he's available, we need to get him out. I feel like there was always an undertone and an undercurrent of that. So then, okay, who actually gets credit? Is it Charlie for sussing out that Tiffany was going to play the idol, or at least threatened to play the idol?
I would say sus is... perhaps I'm putting it mildly, considering she told him.
Clearly said it. He's like, I'm picking up on something here.
let me do a little bit of mind work here. Yeah. Okay. Look. And then did she go on to tell everybody else? Yes. Okay. Fine. So yeah. All right. Maybe that's not okay. So not Charlie then. but then, yeah, I mean, to be honest, I don't know. Then is it Kenzie for keeping Hunter cool to not play the idol, right? So maybe it's not so much about who orchestrated the votes, then it's about, okay, who prevented him from playing the idol? Because, I mean, he is eyes glued to her, like, the whole time.
Yeah.
Both throughout tribal council and even when the votes are being read. And Tiffany, and Kenzie has this really funny moment where Hunter looks back at her and she's just like, pay attention to what's going on in front of you.
She nods like, yeah, watch yourself get voted out, buddy.
Yeah, just watch. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's tough. That's a really, really tough question to answer.
I mean, maybe it's because I'm a bit biased due to the fact that Hunter explained his entire thought process through Exit Press, which, listen, I always recommend people check out. But definitely this week, I think, to give a sense as to, like, the very tight numbers that Hunter was scripting out in the sand prior to this, from what he expressed, he had assumed that at worst it was going to be like a 4-4 vote between him and Q. And so he thought, okay, if I'm that fifth vote for Q, then Q's gone. I don't need to play my shot in the dark. I don't need to play my idol. I'm good for another round. And it seems like the one person that he misjudged was Tiffany. And it was because Tiffany goes into tribal council and just absolutely chews Q up and spits him out, that I think Hunter at that point was thinking, there's no way she is going to vote for him to stay after all that. And suffice it to say, she did. I do also think that, yes, there was a little bit of confusing chaos to begin with, because this tribal council was so much from Hunter's perspective. It did seem like it was going to be a split vote. And so it was sort of that matter of, where does everyone else's votes lie? And Hunter thought, okay, I think I know where things are going, where I can eke it out and not have to play my idol. But it turns out that nope, because he misjudged pretty much one person. That's the reason why he's gone.
But also, like, and I love that Hunter gave that logic. And I think that that probably is really accurate to what he thought was happening. But if you really feel like you have to depend on a single person, maybe that is the good scenario to just use the idol. Or I don't know if either of you saw this online, but I saw somebody suggesting that this was maybe a great opportunity for Hunter to use his shot in the dark. And then depending on the outcome of that, he can still use the idol, which I actually loved.
He told me that was going to be his initial plan, that he actually was going to use his shot in the dark and then use the idol if it failed. But again, I think he had assumed that the vote margin was so tight that he felt, I need this vote so that I can carry through. And then I'll still have my shot in the dark, and then I'll still have my idol, because he knew he basically had to, like, win out at least the next couple of rounds. And he felt with a couple of opportunities at safety, he could do it as long as he made it past this next vote.
Yeah, I think that that's always the debate, right? Is that, well, okay, yes, you survive one more day in the game, which I think is probably what you should prioritize. But I also understand the inclination to say, like, well, if I'm not going to survive this vote, there's no way I'm making it to the end. So I might as well, like, try to go for it. I think for Hunter, though, the decision to just, like, tell everybody you have an idol and then to visibly panic at tribal council, to me, is like, what is you doing? Like, okay, like, if you're like, I have an idol, then you got to, even if you're not going to play it, like, Tiffany, you got to be like, calm, cool, collected, like whatever, like I'm safe. I have an idol. I'm not going to play it. You have to act that part up. The fact that he just looks like he's panicking, you know, like, okay, either he's bluffing, because that was also the assumption. We had some people say that in this episode, like, well, maybe he's just lying about having an idol. So it just, yeah, I don't know. It just seemed like a pure panic moment. But I mean, Hunter in his preseason press said, look, I'm looking for someone who will be the strategic person. Like, he recognized that that was maybe not necessarily his strong suit. So yeah. Poor Hunter.
Yeah. I mean, it's and I wonder also, again, if you're looking at the vibe of the tribe, could people have not believed Hunter because the idol information they'd had so far was so public? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously nobody knows about the gem idol to the point that Maria still thinks Ben has one from the secret scene last week. But Tiffany's idol has now become such public knowledge that I imagine if someone approaches you in the 11th hour saying, oh no, I have an idol and I'm going to play it, you're like, yeah, but I feel like that information would have gotten out, especially given this cast.
Mm-hmm. Right. And somebody like Hunter, who, you know, his number one ally just left. He clearly feels like on the bottom. I think even before Tevin left, some of the way that he was like acting and speaking in confessionals, it seems like he felt that his back was up against the wall just from being a challenge threat. So it does seem like that's information that would get out. The other thing that I want to make sure we talk about is how baller was it that Tiffany did not play her idol? That was insane, insane, insane. And I genuinely I still wish that she had played it, because I think that now going into the next vote, her target has actually expanded.
Oh yeah.
Given that she was brave enough not to play it. I think if she had, you know, everyone finds out about the idol, she plays it the next round. She's like, sorry guys, I didn't even want it. You know, I felt safe. I just wanted to play it to get it out of my hands. Mm-hmm. People are pretty chill, but now she's genuinely a real target and she has an idol that they need to flush. But I was shocked she didn't play it. Shocked. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of one of those situations where it's like, you just got to get that off your chest to then be able to sort of sink back, because otherwise you're going to continue to eke out there as a threat, especially when people who were once threats, Q, now have sort of fallen back and everybody's like, Q's not a threat. Like, Q is chaotic. Like, that's the main reason to get him out, is that he's chaos. And Venus, I feel like a lot of people feel similarly. Like, the main reason to get her out is because she could be chaotic, not because, oh, we feel like this is a person who's a threat to win the game.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And I imagine, though, is it a little bit of that Hunter mindset of like, listen, my back's against the wall anyway, Q threw my name out and we can't take that back, because there is this thing too of like, once your name gets thrown out there, Franny, I think you've experienced this firsthand, like, it's really tough to reel that back in, especially if you have a continuous reason to go after them, that she's like, if I use my idol today, there's still a chance that I might go. And if I feel super confident in this plan that I got out ahead with enough time that people actually won't vote for me, that's the fun thing about this episode, one of many, is that the two people with idols did the exact same thing. They approached everyone en masse and said, I'm definitely playing my idol. I'm getting this monkey off my back. Don't vote for me, or, you know, throw your vote away, basically. And for one person, it worked. And for one person, it didn't. And maybe it's a matter of timing. Maybe it's a matter of they wanted to go for Hunter anyway because he's this big challenge threat and he was vulnerable. But it was so interesting to see the two reactions. And I also love Tiffany's thinking of, I'll only play my idol when Hunter plays his, because that for her is like, technically if Hunter had played his idol, Q had gone. But I think in that instance, you're like, I would much rather be safe than sorry. Plus, to the point earlier made, she still is in this situation. But in that case, I don't think she necessarily would want to be like the only person left with that idol in the next vote with someone like Hunter still in the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Definitely. The other thing that's really interesting, Mike, I hadn't noticed that both Hunter and Tiffany had done the exact same thing with like very different outcomes. And I was trying to like riddle out what the difference is. I think it's the timing. I also think it really helps that Tiff was not the one to tell people that she had an idol, because then, you know, with Q going around saying Tiff has an idol, I think there's no question of bluffing. Like, in what, I mean, right. Q does some crazy things, but like, what does he gain from bluffing that Tiff has an idol? So I think that that probably helped make a difference too.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Because that's why, and it was like the 11th hour, everybody's questioning like whether or not this is something that's real. Whereas Tiffany's has been out there, and Tiffany has been verbally upset with Q. Like, so clearly, like, this, unless this is some super elaborate ruse, it's unlikely that it was a bluff, and it does feel real that Tiffany truly does have the idol. I think it was Venus and Liz that were sitting next to each other when they overheard Tiffany and Q, like, yelling at the beach. That was a very, very funny reaction to, like, their domestic dispute.
I mean, this episode was hysterical from reactions, particularly from Venus, who kind of acts the same way whether she's on the bottom or quote unquote on the top or less on the bottom as she was this episode, between like her approaching Hunter like, come on, Mr. Strategy, and them being so blunt to each other's faces with, oh yeah, I voted for you because I knew Tevin was going, but I knew nobody would be mad if I wrote your name down. She goes, I'm mad. He goes, well, you're always mad.
It's mad.
The wild thing about this, that conversation was shown to happen before the challenge. It actually happened after the challenge. It happened the afternoon while they were scrambling and running around the place. Hunter said the sequence of events was that he was approached by the Seegas about this plan to vote off Tiffany and with Kenzie. That was like the scene that we got. Mm-hmm. And then like Q walked over to the boat and then Venus did. And then it led directly into this scene. And then it leads so beautifully into Hunter walking up to her and saying, I have an idol. And she just stares at him and he goes, you look so unimpressed.
Oh my gosh, that's interesting. Yeah, because there was Venus actually says something in that that conversation where she's like, well, I'm happy to be safe, or like it feels good to be safe, or something like that. So it's like, okay, that's weird that it happened after. It's like, did you win immunity? Like, no. But okay, interesting.
Yeah, she says the peace of knowing you're not going home is so sweet.
Okay. Wow. I see, interesting.
Their relationship is so funny. I love about Venus. You know, her confessionals are great. I love that she's just like, she says whatever she's thinking. My favorite thing about her is her willingness. It sounds like, which is what happened in this clip that we didn't actually see, her willingness to just walk up to conversations and be like, I'm just going to walk up. What are they going to do? Stop me? It's so funny because it's like, you're right. Like, we have these, you know, invisible walls where we're like, well, they're talking over there. I can't go disrupt it. I like that she, you know, breaks them down, wrecking ball and all. Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, she's very Daenerys Targaryen, right? Like, she's going to break the wheel. And it's also probably a bit of a polarizing leader, I should say. We got to talk about, speaking of breaking protocols, Franny. I mean, even from your new era perspective, are you like shaking your fist at the screen saying, back in my day, Jeff didn't offer snacks at tribal council?
Oh, yeah. I think Jeff probably feels very bad that they didn't get rice. I think, you know, back in my day, everyone just agreed that we should get rice. So I think that was a fun moment from Jeff. It's funny because Jeff is like, I feel like he's sort of refinding his footing. I think that he, you know, he was like sassy for so long. And then he was really on this train of like, I'm supporting you and you're all living out your dreams. And this is, you know, I feel like he was kind of on that train for a while. And now he's trying to strike this happy medium, but it's funny because he like alternates between really blatantly like ribbing on the players. That moment of the challenge was insane. If Jeff had said that about a group that I was in, I think I might've started crying, to be totally honest with you. I guess I'm not going to win. Oh my God. So to go from that to like, you know, Jeff is at home in his cabana or whatever, like popping microwave popcorn and thinking, yeah, I'm going to give this to them tonight. Like, I'll show them that I'm not so mean. It's so funny. It's a funny visual.
Jeff's like planning out his bits. He's like got his cushion in hand. He's like, I'm ready to go.
You have phone, wallet, keys, popcorn, butt cushion.
Yeah.
I'm good.
That's the thing. No, he has like a bunch of note cards and he's trying to arrange them like a sketch show of like, okay, so if I insult one team, I think I could then follow it up with butt cushion and popcorn. I think that feels like a nice pairing.
Butt cushion, it's an equalizer. Everybody loves the butt cushion. And then everybody, we give them back, and then we give them popcorn. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, Franny, though, the challenge thing. It also felt like it just came out of nowhere. It was like, what? And then continues during the commentary. I thought they were going to suck ass. They were going to be the most worst team ever, but I'm wrong. Like, what is happening right now? It's giving sort of similar to the surprise of in 45 with the knife with the rice.
Yes.
Where just all of a sudden you're just like, Jeff. What is happening?
Well, the odd thing about that when he's like, I'm going to say what everyone at home is thinking, which is like, first off, have you met this fan base? That is not a good thing to say. There is no such thing as a universal statement that can apply to the Survivor fan base. Uh-huh. But B, what a wild statement to make many, many months in advance of like, I know that these people are sitting here saying that you three are losers right now. And there's no follow-up statement to your play, Freddie. It's like, good luck with that. Use that as fuel if you want to.
Yeah, it's so odd. I think he's trying like really hard to be sassy is what I think it is. Like he and with the knife too, like, you know, we don't need to turn to prop comedy. You can make a couple of like sassy jokes. We don't need to pull out the knife. I think he really wants to bring back that side of him. And he's like, this is the cast to do it. Like, they're chaotic. It doesn't matter if I insult them, they're going to do something weird no matter what.
Yes, that was my other thought, was talk about matching the energy of your cast. Talk about matching the social construct that this group has created. Jeff is just leaning straight into that.
Well, that's the thing. In my opinion, I don't think he expected to be giving out popcorn. I think he genuinely like sat back and was like, I'm going to be eating the popcorn tonight. Like, he looks legitimately surprised when Charlie's like, oh, well, now you have to share this with the rest of the class. And then he's like, oh, yeah, okay, I guess I will. Like, back in those days when he would give everyone like a sliver of a Snickers bar to sample what they were playing for. And so, because, I mean, there was, I say that out of one side of my mouth, but the other thing was, he talks about this on Fire, the official Survivor podcast. If we had gone down a certain line of thinking that Jeff was going down with some of the people he had been texting about to build this idea, it could have been bigger. At one point, they were considering wheeling in a popcorn machine, like one of those things you see at
like
the fair.
Next
to, you know, your 50-50 raffle tickets. And he would have allowed them to get up throughout tribal council, not to whisper to each other, but to help themselves to popcorn as the evening would carry forward.
Wait, I like that more. I think you're gonna go for it. Go all the way.
Go for it.
I love the idea of like, you know, we have this like tribal council set that's very like, it's, you know, creating this very intense atmosphere, like the seats and the lighting, whatever. And then when somebody just rolled a popcorn machine, like, this isn't supposed to be here. Oh man, we missed out. That would have been really fun.
Oh, I'm also imagining just circus music playing for some reason. Like,
I mean, this season is like a clown show, so I think it only makes sense. But also, could you imagine like, you talk about Jeff using popcorn as props. Imagine everyone else. Like, could you imagine Tiffany getting a bowl of popcorn and just dumping it on Q's head? Or like Hunter's throwing kernels at Liz to be like, hey, talk to me. Talk to me about what's going on. Like, it would just be outright mayhem on top of the already existing mayhem that was happening at that tribal council.
Oh my goodness. That would have been, could they just not get a popcorn maker? Or Jeff was like, nah, it's too
much. What was the limiting?
He said it was too much. They said that it felt it was too distracting, especially with the idea of like, oh, you can eat popcorn. Oh, you can help yourself. Just get up. I mean, Franny, listen, you were there in attendance for one of those all-you-can-eat pizza reunions where I would imagine it's a little bit distracting when you're trying to maintain a conversation.
Yeah, and let's be real, Liz probably would have just walked up there and just stood there the whole time. She just eating. Liz actually no longer is participating in tribal. She's just eating popcorn. So yeah, I think it would have messed with the flow a little bit, for sure.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it was a really fun flow though, too. Like, I love the fact that there is a lot of bloviating that's happened in Survivor seasons past of like, oh, it's so chaotic and so up in the air, but like, it's usually a pretty rote outcome. But it feels like these tribal councils, if there isn't votes that are changed, there's at least like a lot of stuff up in the air, considering that this legitimately felt like there were two different conversations happening, where the front row is being the good students trying to entertain all of Jeff's questions while eating popcorn, and Hunter is the bad kid in class causing so much mayhem, being like, Charlie, are you voting for me? Charlie, get Liz. Can you get Liz? Can you ask Liz if she's voting for me? Like, it legitimately felt like two different narratives happening. And I thought the editing was so good in that, listen, I don't think any of us really felt like, oh yeah, Hunter's going to survive the vote. But I think it allowed us to kind of like get in his headspace of, okay, he's receiving all this confirmation from people. He's freaking out, but he's going to back away from playing it at the last second because he's been basically walked out to the edge of the plank by everybody else.
Mm-hmm. I'm imagining Hunter in class, like writing notes, being like, are you voting me? Yes or no? Passes to Maria. Maria, circle one. Just trying to like get it. That's, yeah, it was obviously a very wild tribal council. It's tough to compare to like last week's tribal council, which felt definitely more of a like WTF, what is even happening right now? Whereas this was, okay, at least I feel like I understand the narrative of what's happening and the decision that's trying to be made. So somewhat more comprehensible than last week, but still, as you said, very, very chaotic.
Yeah.
And last week was wild. Like, we didn't even get to the meat of Jeff asking whatever questions he wanted to ask.
Yeah.
I mean, literally like one question, Q was like, I'm gonna stop you. I'm gonna actually take this in a totally different direction. So it was also, because that was just so weird. It was refreshing to have like sort of a more normal tribal that was a little easier to follow. More normal, I say.
More normal, yeah.
Because
then there's more hijacking where it's like, hey, Q, ask about what's happening at the last vote. And then, you know, he mentions something and Tiffany's like, Jeff, can I say something now? And then they just start arguing back and forth of, okay, yes. You put out Hunter's name. Did I? Looks to Venus. So it still even feels like, to your point, yes, a degree more so towards the sane, but like still, especially compared to new era tribal councils. I mean, Franny, is this something that like you wish you were more of a part of in your season, or are you more so glad, hey, you and not me?
Yeah, so I love it from a viewer perspective. I'm like if we're using the class analogy, I am so the teacher's pet. Like, I want Jeff to ask his question. I want to raise my hand and I want to give my little spectacular answer and then, you know, sit there quietly. So I think it's not my style, like the one kind of live tribal we had in my season. I froze under pressure. Like, I panicked. It was so confusing. I was like, I'm just gonna sit here really quietly, really still. Maybe nobody will notice that I'm still here.
Yeah.
And they'll just figure it out around me. But I think that this is probably why Jeff, you know, is bringing the popcorn. He has to be so excited that he doesn't have to, you know, sit there and come up with his own analogies to get information out of people. Jeff just has to like say, all right. And then it all starts. And that makes things a lot more easy and a lot more interesting for him. So I love it. And I think it must be fun to be a part of as a player just because it's so electric. I think like tribal can get a little repetitive. And especially if you're on the bottom and you really want to try to get information from a tribal. Clearly it didn't work for Hunter in this case. He kind of got the wrong information. But you're going to get a hell of a lot more from a really wild tribal where people are talking than one where everyone's kind of, you know, quietly making random metaphors. So I like it. It's really fun.
Yeah. And everyone is, again, so, so blunt. Even the people that you least expect. In this last tribal council, Q says, you know, I've been at the beach by myself for most of the day. I haven't been talking to anyone. And Ben just says, oh, it's been nice. Like,
which is so, from Ben, it was so funny.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you pissed off Ben, where he's also calling you like a poser loser in the beginning of the episode, you know you've done something wrong.
Oh my god, when that happened, I was like, Ben, like, who put a nickel in Ben? Like, what happened? Like, oh my gosh, and Ben was like on it. He was like complaining to other people. He was complaining in his confessionals. It was like everything about how Q was a disaster and how he didn't like it. I was like, oh my god,
he wasn't here for the shenanigans. He said it last
he was
week,
not.
But even in another moment where Jeff asks, like, Maria, is Q playing a sophisticated game of crazy? And Maria just says, no. Like, these are, again, probably the Sigas are the calmer personalities, the more stable players out of this group. And even they cannot help but pop off when they are not feeling good about something.
I know. Amazing. Oh,
I love it. Yeah, that is really the litmus test. Like, if Ben thinks you're bad vibes, you've done something very horribly wrong. Like, this is, it's going downhill.
Which I get as well. And he expressed it a couple times in this episode that Q throwing himself on his sword, he specifically said, right, I'm going to stop. I'm going to remove myself from the game so you all can start with a clean slate and you all can start playing. And the implication is like, you all weren't playing until I left the game. There still is that sense of ownership where, like, to your point, Liana, you asked, like, what would have happened if they did, you know, succeed in Q's wishes and vote him out. I think he goes to Final Tribal and is like, Yeah, but let's face it, you all didn't start playing until I decided to remove myself from the game, until Q climbed up on the cross that begins with a Q. And so I think Ben was, like, rightfully pissed about that Q is trying to say to the jury as well, yeah, nobody's playing right now. I'm the only one who's doing so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wasn't just implied. He, like, outright said it, essentially. So, okay.
All right. Well, let's continue to talk about Hunter here, because Liana, like you mentioned, Hunter was a big presence in the preseason. We're not just talking about his size. He had the makings of potentially a Jonathan type, a JT type, if you will. Kind of wound up being a little bit of both. But how did you think he was going to do in the preseason?
Okay, so I had Hunter making the jury. I said that Hunter builds survivor challenges for his students. So, of course, he leads Nami to victory in many pre-jury challenges. Socially, Hunter struggles to find permanent allies, first losing Randon, then Tim. He connects with Kenzie, but she, like many others, clocks his challenge beast status. When Hunter loses an individual immunity challenge, everyone jumps at the opportunity to take him out in the season's first unanimous vote. Oh. Jeff is sad. And then I wrote, Hunter wins two individual immunities, and that his allies were Tim, Randon, and the challenge department, and his enemy was Maria.
Wow, I mean, you got a lot of that stuff. Look at you shooting your shot as well by naming the exact number of immunities he would win.
Yeah, I know. Look, I mean, I think I had a very clear vision for how I envisioned. Yes. So I very clearly was like, this is what Hunter's doing. This is what I'm writing. How do I figure out the narrative around that? And, you know, I do think that he was someone who maybe could have succeeded more socially, but I just feel like he really, I don't know, he seemed pretty quiet out there, especially compared to everybody else. And when we talk about matching the energy, it just felt like something that he, in preseason, I think I had potentially higher hopes that he just, like, wasn't able to really match that energy of the intensity of the season.
Well, I'm going to put my Survivor fan hat on again and go out on a limb and say that I am not going to get this prediction correct comparison to Liana. I mean, it's just because it's, like, immaculate to match up to, but I will try my best. So I/Brant Steele had Hunter simulated to actually go out as our Mergatory boot.
Okay.
Missed out on the jury. I said that Hunter lives up to his own preseason prediction, as his game is valued almost purely on his challenge prowess and camp life skills over strategy. His good old boy perception will make him an easy pickup for fellow Southerner Tevin, and the two of them and Soda run things on Nami. Towards the end of the pre-merge, Hunter will get sent on a journey where he'll finally get to interact with his fellow Mississippi boy, Q. The two immediately click and make a plan to work together. Unfortunately, that plan is way too visible by the rest of the tribe. The Seegas try to break up a new budding cross-tribal coalition by going after Hunter at Mergatory. They're joined by Tiffany and Kenzie, who are wary of their closest ally suddenly becoming buddy-buddy with something else. His allies were Tevin and Q, and his enemy was Seega.
The beginning was really.
I was like, are you just reading a recap of the season? It was really good.
All right. Well, that was the inner Jeff. My inner saboteur was the one that was telling me I couldn't do it. But now I'm Liz kicking things over.
You hoe bags.
what the hell, you hoe bags? Do you think she's going to make, like, Kelly made hats from last season of What the Hell, Guys? Liz is going to make Brandon merch of What the Hell, You Hoe Bags?
What the hell, hoe bags? Yeah, maybe they could do a collaboration. You know, these two things aren't so different. It's a similar energy.
Well, I think Liana and I had some similar energy in our predictions, but Franny, it is all down to you're the Tiffany, I guess, in this split vote. Who do you think was more accurate about how Hunter would do?
I have got to give it to Liana. I'm sorry. That was really spot on. I mean, Mike, you had the kind of pre-merge part clocked. I was actually, the most shocking part of your prediction was the fact that he would go to a journey and meet Q. That was, like, too accurate for my taste. I got a little, like, sixth sense happening here. But Liana, I just feel like you kind of the overall vibe of Hunter's trajectory, you really clocked. Unfortunately for him, but fortunately for you. It was really good.
Yay.
Can I throw out a Hunter question? Because look, We wouldn't be recording this podcast on Sunday, April 28th, if I didn't bring up the news that is 12 hours old, which is Jeff Probst has officially made it announced that Survivor 50, which is coming up in a couple of years, but still is going to be a returnee season, the first seemingly full returnee season. At least a good chunk of them will be returnees in the new era. And I've seen, obviously, some comparisons between Hunter and Jonathan in terms of, you know, challenge prowess, certainly, I would say maybe more so like individual performances and team challenges. I mean, there was definitely a lot of comparisons between like Jonathan dragging his team through torrential waters versus what Hunter was able to do in using Tevin's momentum to bring him over the little rolling pin back in episode 3. And so I guess the question I have is, let's put on our casting hats for a second. Do we think they're going for like the same slot in a returning season? And if so, who do you think is more likely to get cast between the two?
Ooh, interesting. I guess they fall into the same slot. I mean, I think that one thing about this group of, okay, so all new era, right?
I don't
who
know.
Like the, Let's just say, hypothetically, new era, who are like the really big, strong guys?
We have
Jonathan, Hunter.
Jonathan, Hunter, Ryan.
Q?
Q.
Ryan.
Q. I don't think.
Q's funny because he's throwing challenges.
He's throwing challenges. Q to me is giving War Dog, where it's like he kind of seems like he should be good at challenges, but then he gets there and you're like, why is this guy?
War Dog, it's War Dog, but turn the G backwards and it's a Q.
That's so good.
Yeah, War Dog.
War Dog. Like, if you're going to cast, I guess the point I'm trying to make is that I just feel in the new era that there's not a lot of people who occupy that space when it comes to that particular casting profile. So if you're looking for someone who's going to take that slot, I think there's a very few people to choose from, which I do think then brings us back to the Jonathan v. Hunter discussion. For me, I think I would rather see Hunter play again. And this could be completely an editing thing, but I do feel like there's more to Hunter's game. It feels like there's more depth there than with Jonathan's. And I think that another opportunity, again, reveals more layers. And I think for Hunter to be able to do that would be my personal preference.
Franny, I'm not going to... I don't want to force your hand, considering that, listen... We may be talking with somebody that might be in the mix for said season.
Trying to get me some Emmys, Mike? You're trying to get me Emmys?
Yes.
Listen,
who do you hate? Freddy,
who do I hate? I'm here for the drama. I want people to be vocal and be blunt.
Yeah. Did you bring popcorn? I'll just go through a list of my least favorite new era players. No, I think of the two. So it's an interesting dichotomy because I also think, like, I do see one of them getting cast, but it begs the question, do we need one of the biggest, strongest guys there? No, like, is that a slot that we necessarily need to fill? But I think, like, if I put a Survivor producer hat on, a big contributing factor to who gets cast for a returning player season, I would imagine, is who still has story left to uncover. Like, exactly what you were saying, Liana, with the layers. And Jonathan, though Jeff, you know, drooled over his prowess, Jonathan made it really far. And I feel like we really got to see his style of play come to fruition and not work out for him. Whereas Hunter left early enough that there's still so much potential for him. And I really do think that, Hunter's an interesting player because, like, he was talking in preseason about how he thought he would be targeted for, you know, his challenge strength. I wonder if he went in with that mindset in a way that became detrimental to him. Because I actually feel like
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Self-sabotage. Yeah, like I feel like he was making good connections. He does seem quite personable. And I think he could have made that more of the story of his game. He only, he won one challenge?
He won one last individual immunity.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So he won an individual immunity and that's huge. But like somebody like Charlie is doing pretty much equally well in the individual challenges as Hunter is. He outlasted Hunter in that Bermuda Triangle challenge. And he was right there at the end on the pole challenge and then won this one. But nobody's saying that about Charlie, at least not yet, that he's like this major challenge beast. So I think that he maybe shot himself in the foot a little bit. And I would be curious to see what happens if Hunter comes back and has a different mindset around that and can maybe you know, maybe he's not on a tribe that wins every single pre-merge challenge and people kind of break up that perception of him. I think he could do better.
Well, if he shot himself in the foot, we definitely see it considering all the close-ups there were of feet in this episode.
Oh my God. Yeah. We had that on my season too. Like yeah. Both of the challenges that I won were like foot forward, I would say, which is I'm anti-feet, especially my own. I'm like, I don't look down there. So it's very unfortunate with all the close-up shots of my like wiggling toes. It's not cute.
Yeah, feet are so weird. Like, what even are they? Like, they're not hands. Yes. No, they're like you walk on them, but you have toes. Like, what are your toes even for?
They're like leg hands.
Yeah,
notably like not hands though. Yeah, they're weird hands. They're like hands with tiny little
tiny
non-dexterous fingers.
I know.
Yeah, fish are like the feet are like wish.com hands. You know, they're like, oh, these are hands. Great. Like, wait, what's going on with the fingers?
I'm just imagining, like, mom, can we get hands? We have hands at home. The hands at home.
Can somebody make that meme? I totally agree with the two of you where I agree that I think Jonathan is the bigger character of the two, and helped by the fact that, to your point, Franny, like, he made it to the last possible point you could before the final three. But I think a couple of factors contributing against him is A, the fact that Hunter does have this second chance sort of unfinished business potential of he went out with this idol in his pocket. Even outside of that, what he was expressing to me about his thinking behind what was going on, like, clearly, yes, the thinking may have been incredibly risky, perhaps unnecessarily so. I think 9 out of 10 people, even if you think the vote margin is that, play your idol no matter what, but like, does show that he has some capabilities there. I also think on top of that, Jonathan struggled a lot with the nutritional stuff in the new era, if you remember correctly, that like because of the lack of food, like he was starving away, and that made him a little bit more hangry, a little bit more spicy in his own regard. But I do wonder, like, if that's something he would necessarily want to put himself back into, especially with like the 2% body fat that he maintains versus someone like Hunter, who, like, I guess compared to Liz, everyone's doing fine, but like it seemed like he wasn't having as much difficulty as a quote unquote bigger guy with the elements than someone like Jonathan did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think also, like, okay, no offense to Jonathan, but like how much does he care about Survivor? Okay. Like, right. Like, I don't know.
Question.
A critical question. I'm just saying, like, of the two also, who would want to come back, but I don't know. I think I go to Franny's point about, like, okay, is this absolutely necessary? Like, if you are starting to put together your casts, which I'm sure people are already starting to do, you know, is that a spot somebody that you're like, oh yeah, we definitely need to have this person? Because I feel like there's so many great people just in the new era that you can pick from. So Hunter to me does not pop to the top of mind that I personally might pick, but you never know. I think diversity is really important. So maybe we do need a big, strong guy on the season.
I mean, yes, I agree. But on the other hand, there is a sizable chunk of the fan base that was very pro Hunter.
Yeah. And I told you I didn't get it.
Yeah. But I think that's like, that is, you know, the numbers end up winning out in the game of Survivor.
No, you're
correct. And so I do think, you know, like the I've seen so much Hunter content of like, I'm not watching the show anymore. He was the best player. Mm-hmm. He was the only one I'm rooting for, et cetera, et cetera. And so I think even from our perspective, we felt like his character was a bit more muted just compared to everyone else around him. He definitely echoed with a certain part of the fan base that is also quite vocal as well. So I think there's a sizable chance him or someone like him could be back on a returning season.
I think him probably.
Yeah, I think really what it comes down to is if there is kind of clear theming around that season, season 50. Like, if it's like a Legends of the New Era, then I think it would probably have to be Jonathan. If it's second chance New Era players, then certainly Hunter. Just because I think, yeah, though they occupy a similar niche, their stories are quite different.
Yeah.
Well, let's move into the next chapter of our story here on the B&B. And look, the dynamics of Survivor 46 seem to get mixed up every day, where we can't necessarily tell our A's from our Z's, or our Q's, if you will. So I thought I would apply the metaphor once again, and no, we're not going to a factory here. We're instead going to be playing a good old game of Survivor Anagrams. So here's how this is going to work. I'll give you some time if you want to bring up both of you the cast list for Survivor 46. I am going to read an anagram of the name of a Survivor 46 cast member. When you think you know the answer, you can buzz in and make a guess. If you are right, you'll get a point. If you're wrong, I will give the other person a chance to guess. And then either way, we will move on. For example, if I were to say Fireman ran in, then you can buzz in and say Franny Marin. And that would be the correct answer. Ooh. That is an anagram of your name, Franny.
I was like, Do you recognize that? That's what people call me. I can't believe I missed it.
To be fair, that's how you got saved by your idol, was that a fireman ran in and gave it to you.
It's my whole story summed up in an anagram. It's incredible.
So I will say as well, the majority of the time I did go with full names. I know we have a lot of nicknames this season. So if you're looking, especially like a Survivor Wikipedia page, I usually go by that full first name. Just because it gave more options, you know, it's a little tough to be like Chew Burdette and try to get words from that. Yeah. I want you
need
each
Quintavious. You need the letters.
Yeah. I want you each to come up with your own individual buzzer, just so I know who's the one that's tuning in here. Liana, what's your buzzer?
My first thought was popcorn, but I think I'm gonna go butt pillow.
All right. Always, you know. That could be the theme of season 50 is butt pillows versus popcorn.
Butt pillow.
These are the people who got off the couch versus people that make the entertainment.
Oh boy.
Franny, what about you?
I didn't know we were doing words, so my first thought was honk honk.
You can do whatever you want.
You can make whatever sound you want to.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine's gonna be a honk. A good honk.
All right, so we've got the goose versus the down butt pillow.
Yes.
Oh, a real rivalry.
Exactly. Here we go. Before versus after. So again, I will read an anagram. I'll actually, depending on how long you're taking, I might read through a few because I made quite a bit, and we'll see if you can guess it.
Okay.
Here is your first anagram. Crunk them thing.
Yes. I don't even know, but that's amazing. Is it crunk with a K or crunk with a C?
Crunk with a K. Crunk them thing.
Oh, honk, 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 honk.
Yes, Franny.
Is it Hunter McKnight?
That is correct. Hunter McKnight anagrams.
Crunk them thing.
Some other anagrams for Hunter are think trench gum.
Oh, that's what you should have said to him after he didn't play the idol.
Yep,
what he should have done out there.
Trek Munch Night.
Oh, okay.
Or get thin, Mr. Chunk.
I don't think he needs help with that, but yeah.
I know, it's a little rude.
These are great.
That's like what Jeff would say in a challenge. Like, depending on where the flip of the coin is, like, hey, get thin, Mr. Chunk.
Get thin, Mr. Chunk. Oh my God.
All right. Great. Next anagram. Manhood spots.
Oh my God.
Manhood spots. Also, manhood spots. Mastodon shop.
Ooh.
Mastodon shop. Oh, wait. Is it honk, honk, honk?
Yes, Franny.
Is it Soda Thompson?
That is correct. Soda Thompson.
Okay.
Manhood spots.
Oh my gosh.
There we go. Amazing. The P jumped out at me. Yeah, manhood spots.
Much like it does with manhood spots.
Yeah. Oh no. I gotta zip myself up after that one.
Is that your Franny? Is that your Franny pullover?
Yeah,
it's Brandon merch.
Hide.
Yeah, this is my merch. Yeah, I'm just hiding.
We asked to suggest it last week. Franny, if you like at the height of like your time on the show could come out with a piece of merch, like the Q skirt, what would it have been?
Oh God. Oh, Carolyn's belt. Would have just sold that.
That's true. You walked out with it, so.
I did, yeah. So I can sell that for a lot of money, probably.
Yeah,
it's just one piece of merch, a single
one singular belt.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Franny has already taken a lead 2-0, but Liana, we still have a long way to go.
Okay.
With this next one, anal bob hug.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my god.
Butt pillow.
Yes, Liana.
Is it Banu?
It is Banu. Banu Gopal, anal bob hug.
Oh.
That's what happens when you ask for a million hearts. Sometimes you get that anal bob hug. Also, anagrams for Banu Gopal are Gabon Lap-a and No Alpha Bug.
Well, Gabon is very fitting, given some of the comparisons we've had this season.
Yeah, what do you make of that? Do we feel like this is truly the new era Gabon?
It does kind of feel that way, doesn't it?
A little chaotic.
I guess it depends. Like, what do you classify, like, when people make that comparison, Mike, what do you think is, like, the reason why they're making that comparison?
Because I think what people generally compare to Survivor Gabon is, like, kind of this train wrecky quality where it's a bunch of personalities, right, of people who don't like each other, a bunch of threats are taken out in the middle of the game, and it ends up with just kind of, like, this random winner towards the end. So I think it's this idea of, like, chaotic personality shining overall.
And very memeable, I think. Very memeable.
Very memeable, yeah. Very this memeable. Definitely is, I think, one of the most memeable seasons we've had so far. And that is after we've had a season that features Carolyn in it, which is like a meme in and of herself.
Exactly. Yeah. I think for me, the key is people not liking each other. Like, that really seems to stand out to me. And I think we'll have to wait and see the completion of the season. Like, do we feel like we're going to be left with this sort of random group of people to really fully compare it? But I do think that it shares a lot of the same elements.
All right, Liana, you're on the board now. Let's see if you can continue the streak with this next one. Caffeine vinyl intro.
Whoa!
That does sound like the name of a Jack Johnson song, but it is also the anagram name of a contestant. Caffeine vinyl intro.
Caffeine vinyl intro. That's a long one.
Honk, 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 honk.
Yes, Franny.
Wait, is it Tiffany Nicole Irvin?
That is correct. You still have for a second, but you're ultimately correct here. We didn't even have to cut to your feet. A couple of other anagrams for Tiffany Nicole Irvin. Vilify, not refinance. Which is maybe a statement about the housing
that's
market.
That's a bit cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the plot of The Big Short.
how about a little bit of international stuff? Love France Infinity.
Oh, okay.
And official intern envy.
Oh,
did you, Mike, did you sit down with like letters on post-it notes and arrange these, or was there an online program that made them for you?
No, I'm not Jeff arranging what bits to do. Luckily,
okay,
computer is taking care of it for me. We're running in 2024.
I'm picturing you at like 4 a.m., like eyes red, bugging out of your head, like caffeine, man, anal, like you're just all trying to get it done.
I mean, hey, those are the things I usually say to myself at 4 a.m. But it also, listen, I do pick and choose. Like another anagram for Tiffany Nicole Irvin is infancy often virile.
Oh.
Oh. Hmm.
No. Just no.
All right. Next up here. Okay. Hooraying Ram.
Oh, that's so cute.
Hooraying Ram.
Hooraying Ram.
Hooraying Ram.
Let's take it into a more Mike Mess direction. Maria go horny.
Oh. But Maria, it's not horny. Maria.
Could be.
Oh, could be.
Wouldn't it be the ultimate trick? What if I just used the name of one of the contestants in the anagram?
Is it honk, honk, honk?
Yes.
Mariah Gaynor?
That is correct. Mariah Gaynor anagrams to Hooraying Ram and anagrams to Maria Go Horny.
Oh.
Anagrams to Rainy Hag Room.
Oh. Wow. These are evocative. I need a Rainy Hag Room. Where's my Rainy Hag
anagrams
Room?
Anagrams to, Grain Army.
I like the idea that on cues, like when he's describing houses, he's like, have you seen this room? Perfect for a rainy hag. Room.
Yeah. Anagrams to Harry Roman, go.
Oh, okay. I love that movie.
I think the idea that the list of anagrams that can be made from a person's name are indicative of their personality. Like, that's how I'm taking this in. This
Well, then you love this next one. Ahoy, arm groin.
Is that like your here? Is that here? Is this
is
your
it
arm
here
groin?
Or is it your armpit?
Oh, is it here?
Oh.
Because I said, yeah, this is the arm.
But I guess this would be the leg of the arm. And this would be the groin, because like the groin's not on your feet. I don't know if I'm a biologist. I'm maybe speaking out of turn here.
I don't know much.
That's true.
This is the arm under knee.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever that. Yeah. So this would be okay. So the armpit's the crotch of the torso.
I guess so. And you maybe we're figuring out a lot of body stuff this time. One more from Mariah.
You know when like small towns are trying to differentiate themselves and they're like, we're the jewel of the West. It's like, we're the crotch of the torso. Like,
I took two semesters of anatomy and physiology for my PhD. And I'm just like imagining like doing the dissection and be like, yes, this is the crotch of the torso.
I can basically hear your degree burning up right now. They've just self-immolated from what you're doing right now.
The department's calling. They're like, we need that back. You don't deserve that.
Well, probably because you're affiliated with a podcast that decides to make an anagram of a person named Mariah Gaynor and they come up with orgy moan hair.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Talk about describing your personality.
Revoked.
Yeah. I mean, I think like if it's a little mussed up, right? Like if it's a little all over the place, you got that orgy moan hair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Girl, you got that orgy moan hair. Let's go.
Oh, what have you been doing? What were you doing last night? You got that orgy moan hair.
All right. Well, next up, Franny's taking a commanding lead here, but there's still time.
Yep.
Next up, radical hives. Perhaps a symptom alongside manhood spots, radical hives.
I think the problem is I get so entrenched in like the actual anagram that I forget that I
You're welcome.
Yeah.
Or how about take this one for a drive, a devilish car.
Ooh.
Oh.
Okay, wait, Liana, butt plug. Or butt stuff. What was that?
Orgy moan hair.
Is it Randon?
No, it's not Randon.
No!
Yes.
Charlie Davis?
It is Charlie. Don't call me Miles Davis. Charlie Davis is radical hives, is also a devilish car.
Wow. He is a devilish car.
He's dropping his way through this game. He's also caviar shield, which makes sense. Oh. He did say, remember, in his like one of his first confessions, is like, I've lived a pretty privileged life. I think he's had a caviar shield or two.
Mm-hmm. But it's that his caviar shield, yes. And underneath, he's understanding.
I would argue, could Liz be someone's caviar shield? Like, we have meat shields. Liz is rich.
Caviar shield.
She's your caviar shield.
My God. We did
it. I love that.
Yes.
Caviar
shield. That's so good.
All right, people steal that.
I'm using
for the
that
next
on season
seasons.
50, Mike. Yeah.
There we go.
Keep them. They're our caviar shields.
As long as you're not using the armpit is the groin of the torso, I think we're good.
That's going to be the episode title of premiere season 50. Just you wait.
I mean, you need something to pass the time during those endurance challenges. All right. Next up, this one only has a couple. Zen Kitty P.
Oh,
Ben. Liana, butt pillow. Ben.
But Liana.
No, it's not.
What?
Plug Liana, it's not. Ben.
No.
Randy, do you have a guess for Zen Kitty P?
Zen Kitty P. Okay. Quick guess. I'm going Liz Wilcox? No, there's no P.
Liana.
Oh, crappity crap.
Liana.
I know
no,
it is.
No,
butt
you
pillow.
Both. You already, butt pillows and honks have been extinguished. They've already been used up. There's a lot of Z's in this cast for a cast that has not been putting us to sleep. It is Kenzie Petty. Zen Kitty P. Also, Keen Zit type.
Keen. Keen. Huh.
All right, let's see if you're keen on this next answer. Add Jive Slinky.
Oh! Honk, honk!
You look Franny.
David Jelinski?
That is correct. Hey! That's the Jive Slinky we know and love.
Yes, he is. Yes,
this is one of the ones that the descriptor was like, A1, absolutely matches up. He is a Jive Slinky.
Everything aligned in my mind. It was perfect.
It all makes sense. It all makes sense.
David Jelinski also anagrams to Jade Vinyl Disc, Sad Kindly Jive, and Lanky Did Jives, which I heard Zelensky was at Adam Klein's wedding, so maybe he did do a lot of jives out there on the dance floor.
Mm-hmm. And he is lanky.
His are really, really accurate. After this is done, I'm going to anagram my own name, and I cannot wait to see what comes up. Fireman ran in. True. They need more.
I think the other one I found for you was, let me see. It was Maine Rain Fern.
Oh, I like that.
You got plants in the background.
Plant behind you. Yeah.
That's your Maine Rain Fern.
See?
All right, well, I'm pretty sure, like, Liana, you're mathematically eliminated.
Right.
We're having too much fun with these, so let's keep going.
Nah, we gotta keep going.
Unashamed jam, sis.
You tell him.
Unashamed jam, sis. That's what Charlie's saying when he's like, why are you putting on speak now for the umpteenth time? Unashamed jam, sis.
Butt pillow.
Yes, Liana.
Jem.
Jem Hussein Adams, that is correct.
Yes. All right.
Also, anagrams to Jade Humans Amiss, a sad Jasmine Mush.
It's a lot of Jade.
And a Smash Jam Undies.
Oh.
You jam your undies. That's how you get some orgy moan hair.
That's true. You don't need to tell me twice.
All right. Next one. Abusive Turd Quintet.
Oh no.
Honk honk.
Yeah, yes, but pillow.
That's gotta be cute.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Abusive Turd Quintet playing the songs of Quintavious Burnett.
Oh no.
We also have Debutante Quit Virus.
Oh.
Oh. Another name for COVID-19. Yes.
Oh, no.
Because they had to shut down all the pageants.
I guess that's true. Yeah, they had to quit the debutante ball.
The debutante quit virus is coming.
Yeah. Okay. And I think maybe one of my, I've got two really fun ones here. First, a Butt United Quivers.
Oh, that's lovely. I love that one.
Which is like, I feel like that's the E Pluribus Unum. Like if I were to ever come up with a nation, a Butt United Quivers.
Yeah.
And then also, which is I think the most appropriate to cue, a Butt Drives Unquiet.
Oh, his butt does drive unquiet.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely. That is Q's motto.
These are great. This is like poetry.
It does feel like it. Jay Mai, if you want to put these in some of your songs, I'm just saying.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, next up here, speaking of poetry and songs, Diva Invest.
Butt pillow.
Yes, Liana.
Tevin.
That's correct. Tevin Davis. Anagrams to Diva Invest. Also, a Vivid Nest. Also, a bit of a throwback to social media. Vine is not TV ad.
Oh.
I mean, it's not. Not wrong.
Not wrong. Not wrong at all.
Not wrong.
All right, here's the next one for the frannies out there, the do-gooders.
Ooh.
Crime tips.
Oh.
But hello.
Liana.
Tim.
Yep, Tim Spicer is crime tips.
He is crime tips, though.
He really is.
He just is. Mike, he just is.
He has big narc energy. He's got crime tips.
It's just crime tips. I can like hear him saying that in a confessional with his little bow. Crime tips. Crime tips.
Well,
yeah.
I'm trying to think. What's that John Mulaney bit? Street smarts when he was talking about
street
when,
smarts.
When the guy used to come. Like that's what I think about with crime tips.
Yes. Same energy.
Tim anagrams to septic rim. And also, I guess speaking towards the titular butt pillow, epic sit, mister.
Ah, that's what Jeff did. Yeah. And Tribal, he was like, epic sit, mister.
If this took place in 2009, epic sit, mister would be a title of an episode.
Or Mr. Epic Sit.
Mr. Epic Sit.
That's his official title.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
Call me
Epic
Sit. That's my father. That's my father is Mr. Epic Sit.
Mr. Epic Sit. Just call me Jeff.
You can call me Jeff.
All right, well, Liana, you made a bit of a comeback, but I think you're mathematically eliminated.
Aww.
There's one more left, though. And this might be my favorite.
Oh.
Modern anal. No TV.
No TV! Oh! Look no TV. Below!
Yes, Liana.
Randon!
Yes, Randon Montalvo anagrams to modern anal. No TV.
No TV. Oh,
poor Brandon. Wow. Can't catch a break.
No. Yeah. What a punishment. Maybe not a punishment for some. Brandon Montalvo also anagrams to damn noon travel.
Yes. Damn noon travel.
We also have fishy. Also toned navel norm.
Which does require it. Yeah.
Disrupts that toned navel norm.
Yes, exactly. Come on. We're the other body types. And finally, maybe this is a bit of a crime tip here. Mr. No Note Vandal.
Oh, No Notes.
Yes.
Oh, Jeff's other names.
Oh,
no, no, either Vandal. That or it's like, this is the rudest criminal ever. He doesn't even leave a note at the scene of the crime. He is Mr. No Note Vandal.
Yeah, that's his calling card.
It's no calling card.
It's none.
Well, listen, Liana, you were able to make up a good amount of time. You were sort of the Liz, Q, and Venus equivalent, but Franny was the Charlie, Maria, and Hunter, adequate to all the feet shots. Congratulations. You are the master of anagrams.
Thank you. That was fun. Mm-hmm. I love that. I'm going to anagram everything now. It's a new policy.
I cannot wait to see how mystified Matt is going to be by this extra layer of communication he's going to have with you.
Yeah. Matt Blankenship has to anagram to something good. There's some good letters in there.
See, I was trying to remember what I had done first season.
Yeah.
Let me do it right now. As I'll throw it to you, Franny, while we sort of yada yada through this, but not through this next important part. Because at the end of every podcast, we give time to our guests to dedicate a charity or cause that is important to them. So the ball is in your court. What would you like to communicate to everybody out there that they should check out from a charity perspective?
Yes. So I'm actually going to hype up the same group that I recently played for on Twitch and won $100 for from Rob Sesternino, which is Point of Pride. This is a really great organization that works with trans youths, especially, and tries to get resources to people who cannot afford things like binders or top surgery, stuff like that. This is top of mind because I actually have two friends who recently got top surgery that I'm so hyped for them. So Point of Pride, it's a great organization, gives a lot of opportunities to a lot of people.
Amazing.
I love that.
I love that. Check that out.
So I did it for 44, the anagram.
Oh, game. You did do it for 44.
So
okay.
So for Franny, I have Amen Fryer in.
Oh!
Rain Man Finer also. There's a lot of variations on Fryer In. So you have Mean Fryer In, Name Fryer In, obviously Amen Fryer In, if you want. Yeah. For Matt, I have a Lambkin That Spins. And also my personal favorite, Think Batman Lips.
Oh, I remember Think Batman Lips now.
Think Batman Lips.
That's how I remember Matt Blankenship personally. I just think Batman Lips.
I think Batman Lips immediately pops to mind. Yeah.
Oh my God. That's great. That's really good. I like mine too. I actually, I played a fryer in a play in high school. So it really fits. See? It's my whole history.
I mean, you're right. It reflects the person.
I am so happy. Hopefully by the end of this, people were thinking about the past hour and a half conversation we had and say, amen, Fryer In, because Franny, you absolutely killed it on your B&B debut. Is there anything you'd like to plug right now? Any last comments you want to make about Survivor 46 before we move on to week 10?
Oh, wow. Well, if you want to see more Amen, Fryer In, we have a medieval set D&D podcast that I'll plug for a second, which is called Surviving the Dice. It's a podcast with myself, Kane Fritzler, Carson Garrett, and Matt Blankenship, where we play Dungeons and Dragons and we have fun guests. Recently had Rob Sesternino on the podcast and he crushed. He did so good. I don't know that he knew what he was doing, but whatever he was doing was great. It was really fun.
Yeah, I'll admit to go a bit, inside Schmergenball. I've had quite a few conversations with him over the years about playing D&D, and he said basically, I would love to role play. I don't care or know about the mechanics. And so I'm glad he was able to kind of fudge his way through the ladder to get to the former, which I'm sure was amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's exactly what he literally came in. He's like, I don't know about dice. I don't want to roll anything. I just want to, have fun. And we were like, we can do that. And it made for a wonderful, wonderful episode. So go check that out. It's everywhere you can find podcasts. It's called Surviving the Dice. That's what I'll plug.
All right, Liana, what do you have going on?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at LianaRHAP. Drag Race is over. So we are taking a few week break before All Stars comes back, which will be May 17th. So believe me, not that long. It's literally right around the corner. But in the meantime, sticking here on the VNB and of course doing Masked Singer coverage with Puya to cover everything that's going on over there.
Can I pitch something after watching the All Stars 9 big twist of like no eliminations?
Okay.
Could we have a Survivor season? Doesn't need to be 50, but
so Edge of Extinction. Oh
yes, exactly. No. Oh, rough. It's a non-elimination season. So maybe you're like voting for each other at the end of every episode to like accrue points towards the end. Mm-hmm. And it's a returning player season. And the contestants are the entirety of the Lulu tribe and the entirety of the Yanu tribe.
Whoa.
Disaster redo. Like, don't worry, guys. The trauma of going to tribal council every single time. Don't worry. It'll be okay.
Just like, well, because people always talk about, like, what if you just ran an entire season back and putting an entire cast on there? And just imagine, like, those two particular tribes rerunning things all over again. It would be absolute mayhem, especially in a format where they couldn't vote each other off.
Oh, yeah. Oh my gosh. Like, imagine, yeah, people, because the benefit of like, if you don't like someone, you vote them out. Like, you don't have to deal with them anymore. But if they are still there, or maybe
they'll, I think it's glorious. Incredible television. Nice?
Yeah, I think, yeah. I agree. I don't know. I think they'll go for it.
I mean, the question is between Q, Hannah, and Sean, who quits first?
Oh no.
But it's a fair question. It's a fair question.
Oh boy.
Oh no. I'm just picturing like they all show up to tribal and all three of them are kind of like, it's like the Spider-Man meme where they're all like looking at each other. Yeah, and like, I quit all the same time.
Yeah, it's like that one time in Survivor Winners of War, right, where Jeremy and Sarah did like you go first. Were you gonna play your thing? Like, yes. It's just them being like, who's gonna speak up first about this?
Who's gonna volunteer to quit first?
Well, you can follow me at @MikeBloomType. I'm not quitting putting out this content anytime soon. As I mentioned, had a really great interview with Hunter where I think, again, if you have a lot of questions, understandably so, about why he ends up not playing the idol and his thinking going to that tribal council, all the chaos leading to that afternoon, really recommend you check it out. I think it was a really great conversation with Hunter overall. Also talked with the team most recently eliminated on The Amazing Race. Talked with Corey Cool on the podcast as well, alongside Jess. Franny, have you ever thought about doing The Amazing Race, considering that you're one of the rare like Survivor alumni that has kind of a live-in partner?
Yeah, so this is interesting. So Matt really, really wants to do The Amazing Race. He's really excited about it. I'm into it. But the biggest reason that we should do The Amazing Race is that Derek and Claire recently moved to San Francisco. So now we have them at our beck and call to ask for, you know, tips, sneaky hacks to win The Amazing Race. So I think now that we have them in our backyard, our odds have increased a lot. We have
Liv, you have in-house winners that you can consult with. So get them on the line, people. Have the casting happen. But I'm talking Amazing Races. That is closing up in its final few weeks. Of course, The Circle, more than halfway through somehow. We're through 8 episodes out of 13 of The Circle. Fortunately, the AI has left, but there are still plenty of mess abound in the form of the human players. I'm talking about it with Puya and Taryn every week. I'm also doing exit press as well for all of the eliminated contestants. I haven't really mentioned this as well. I've been doing exit press for The Masked Singer, and I mentioned this week because I got to talk with Jennifer Lewis, which was like a goddamn delight and was wild and something I never thought that I would be able to do. So if you're a fan of The Masked Singer, obviously check out the podcast coverage and check out my stuff as well. Jennifer Lewis talked about like nearly dying in the Serengeti and then performing on The Masked Singer. So it was a really fun time. And I'm so grateful I get the chance to talk with all of these reality TV stars and to talk with you two about this week of Survivor. I am excited for the energy to hopefully continue. I know that lower expectations are the key to happiness, but the promos are saying like, if there's one episode of the season you don't want to miss, it's next week. So I don't know what to expect, except probably more mayhem and chaos, not only on screen, but on the B&B as well. Still trying to lock in a guest, just have to arrange a couple things. So we'll let that be a surprise as well for when the podcast happens. But otherwise, we'll be back next week doing it all again. Make sure you send us your game ideas, rhapbnb@gmail.com or #rhapbnb on social media. Special thanks to the entire team at RHAP behind the scenes for making this podcast packageable to the eyes, the ears, the torso groins out there, if
no!
you will.
No!
Hope you're all enjoying it so far. We've been having such a fun time. And of course, Wolf from America for his fantastic theme song. Next week, Leon and I will be back to break down episode 10 of Survivor 46. Until next time, everybody, we'll check you out at your next stay.
Mike and Leon are gathered playing some games. You better pray to your mama that they're not super lame. And if that all sounds cool, I can tell you the name. It's the R-H-A-P-B-M-B. Mike and Leon are gathered.